In this second hour of Midday, the line between news and entertainment. Last month's Republican presidential debate drew 24 million viewers. Round two is on CNN tonight. How many will tune in to catch up on candidates' positions or simply to hear Trump beat Trump? In this hour of Midday, Baltimore Sun media critic David Zurawick comments on television's presentation of American politics and the role of late-night hosts in the early campaign. Also, David talks about how Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's relationship with the media affected her political career. Stephen Colbert debuted as the new host of The Late Show last week. How will he fare, replacing a cultural icon? Midday on Media with David Zurawick after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Another edition of Midday on the Media with David Zurawick, my colleague from Calvert Street, the TV critic of the Baltimore Sun, the Z on TV blogger, Midday on the Media contributor, all those things. David, nice to see you.
I am happy to be here. I'm in a good mood. I can't believe it. I was up till 3:30 reviewing Martin O'Malley last night, and I thought I was going to be sawdust.
You look good.
Since walking in here, I'm like lifted up talking to everybody with the show and talking to you. So I'm in a great mood. I'm up.
Well, we're going to talk about Martin O'Malley a little bit today. This show is kind of drenched in politics. It's politics-heavy conversation. Later on, I got a few things I want to talk to you about, some things you've written about the relationship between the media and Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, who announced on Friday that she would not seek re-election. We've got that story we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert
began
his second week as host of Late Night this week. And the host of the once-beloved political satire show, The Colbert Report on Comedy Central, has some big shoes to fill. I want to hear from you what you think, you know, how you think he's doing so far.
Big deal. I think it's a big deal, yeah.
The main event tonight is on CNN, the second round of the Republican presidential debates scheduled for tonight. Two debates, actually, one at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. So this, David, this is the same format as last time. Is the this is all based on polls.
Yep.
So what are we to make of this kind of popularity contest? I mean, as a structure, right?
Yeah.
You've got the little kids table at 6 o'clock, and then you've got the main seating at 8 based on polling results.
Yeah.
You know, Trump et al., who polled the best, Ben Carson in there, they get to go on at 8 o'clock. I mean, what did you think of that structure?
Well, here's what I didn't like about it.
Is it really fair?
Well, you know, what I didn't like about it, first of all, the Republican National Committee approved it all. But really, when you push on it, you find out that the Republican National Committee wanted to wash its hands of it in a way and let the cable channels take control, especially when it started with Fox. You know, the RNC didn't want to fight with Fox. They wanted to essentially let Fox have whatever it wanted. They agreed on this. We'll take the aggregate of certain polls and then the top 10 people. There were, you know, when they told it to me, they acted like, well, this is a very clear formula. And I'm like, no, there's all kinds of wiggle room. You guys are interpreting it. You're picking the polls, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is, there's all kinds of, so now
is,
we.
Is it really fair, actually?
Well, I Dan, this is one, I think I maybe wrote this as soon as they were announced, but here's what it does in answer to your question, I think you're asking me here. Is when we had the first round of selection being caucuses and primaries, voters in those states were given a chance to select the candidates. And as you did through that process is what your chances were of being the ultimate nominee.
Right.
You had to do retail politics. You had to go into those states and you had to meet the voters face to face to some extent. Now, you have the media between the voters and the candidates in an even more intrusive way. The media decides these are the 10 most important candidates based on the polls. And then you have to watch the cable channel to see the candidates. And by the way, instead of spending most of their money in the states, politicking in the states, you know, retail politics, they're spending it on ads on these very cable channels to get their position up in the poll
so
and get
they
selected.
Can make the top 10.
It's like an echo chamber of cable and politics.
I don't think it's fair because you're exposing the people who are already leading in prime time to the most viewers. I understand that it's good
for
ratings.
No, I totally agree.
Trump at 8 o'clock is better than Trump at 6 o'clock, right? I guess?
Yes.
You're telling me people wouldn't tune in to Trump at 6 o'clock?
Of course they would. Dan, I agree with you.
It would be wonderful with my dinner tonight.
And you can see the way when they...
6 o'clock is for losers. You can just hear him now.
6 o'clock is not huge, Dan. But
it's not huge. I'm huge. I belong on at 8.
8, prime time. I'm prime time. But, you know, they knew it was a problem not to have Carly Fiorina on that stage. She did very well in the other debate. But the
At 5 o'clock or whatever it was, right?
In a Fox debate. But they tweaked the standards. They admitted tweaking the criteria to make sure she got on the stage because it was going to look bad. Here, Trump is out there slamming women, saying really bad stuff about women. And the one woman candidate you got can't be on the stage. She's got to be on the kids' table stage or the cocktail hour stage.
Right.
That's a mistake. So they made it, they fixed it, quote unquote, air quotes fixed, to make sure she's on the stage tonight. I think it's really good. I loved Carly Fiorina's TV ad this week about faces when Trump made that really reprehensible comment about her face. And she did an ad and said, "This is a 61-year-old woman's face. I'm proud of every line. And these are the faces." And it showed women. It showed little girls. It showed all these women. Man, nobody has been more effective at showing what a horrible guy that guy is in terms of gender and in terms of sexism and in terms of his notion of what a woman is. But, you know, he keeps going up in the polls. That is a real problem in this country right now. You know, when he said, you know, when they quoted, when in the Fox debate, Gene Marbella at The Sun pointed this out to me the next day. In the Fox debate, when Megyn Kelly asked him about those horrible things he said, calling women animals and all that, and he said, "Only Rosie O'Donnell or something." People cheered. People in the crowd cheered for a man who says that stuff.
The more outrageous things that he says, it seems he gets bumps in the polls.
Yeah, so.
So I want to ask you this. So this is a big question here and something for people to chew on out there. Maybe call us, give us a call and share your comments. Are we placing more value on the entertainment aspect of these debates in the hopes that they'll produce another, you know, Trumpism like those,
right,
rather than really paying attention to candidates' positions, what they have to say? I mean, are people just tuning in now because this is a bit of a circus and Trump is the main attraction? Or are people actually listening to try to make up their minds about, you know, who they might like to see as president?
Dan, I really think this is more of culturally, you know, what now must be 30 years ago, Neil Postman at NYU called amusing ourselves to death. This is the entertainmentification of our politics. I mean, you know, in a way, you wonder what we can get serious about in this country, if even our politics have to be. Look at the debate tonight. I don't blame CNN. CNN is trying to make its money for the year. You know, once they got 24 million people for the Fox debate. Now, that's what makes this complicated. I'm thrilled that they're getting people to pay attention to politics. But it's like, what kind of attention are we paying? Why are we paying attention?
Right.
You know, I had a piece talking about late night, and I said, it's great that they're in late night, and everybody, you know, politicians
are now.
Well,
that's another thing I want to talk about, because that's part of this.
But it's great.
Candidates and the president going on late night TV a lot.
So we're paying attention to it. But the question you have to ask here is it good for democracy, sort of the kind of what it takes to get our attention? If turning it into a WWE wrestling match is what it takes to get our attention with a character like Trump, you know, for these debates, is that part of a process that'll lead to a wise or informed, not forget wisdom, an informed decision about our next president? And man, does it look like it to you? Because it sure doesn't look like it to me. I think
part of Trump's appeal to people is that he's so well known, so visible from television, from reality TV,
exactly,
from being Donald Trump all these years, being an American celebrity.
Yeah, and you know, it's true.
So that kind of follows, doesn't it? So
it
the
does.
Rest of them, Jeb Bush and all of them, got to be. They're competing against somebody who's been
famous for being famous.
You know, in an interesting way, when Trump says, oh, mocks Jeb Bush for being such a quote-unquote low-energy guy and phlegmatic and all that, those are really TV values. TV loves high energy. TV loves Robin Williams bouncing around the set of Tonight Show.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, somebody like me, I know, you know, when I'm on TV, I'm not skilled in broadcast performance. But one thing I know is come out high energy, sort of like this show, Dan.
Right,
I'm not skilled in this either.
That's one thing you do know, David.
Bring the energy, and you'll generally be okay. Mm-hmm. But you don't necessarily judge a president by that. You know, some of our presidents were not real high energy guys. Ike was not a high energy guy. I mean, you might say, well, yeah, look at Ike. But, he didn't do too bad compared to some people.
What's going on here? Right? Isn't it part of the TV appeal?
Dan, I totally think the values of entertainment and television and Hollywood are the values that are taking over sort of the entire culture. You know, doesn't it already affect, a long time, it's affected the way teachers are supposed to teach in school. Teachers are supposed to be entertaining. They're supposed to make it like a show, you know?
Yeah.
And show more DVDs, more video. Just keep, you know, be like television. In almost every realm of our life, that's what's upsetting. Television defines the ideal. It tells us what a beautiful man, a handsome man or a beautiful woman supposed to look like, how we're supposed to dress, what a serious person looks like. A serious person is a nighttime show host on Anchor, on cable TV. That's our new definition of a serious, a public intellectual maybe even. But and that's what's happening, I think. So why shouldn't, and just what you said, so why shouldn't our president look like a reality TV star who operates in a boardroom and who fires people? Of course, that's like the logical end.
410-662-8780. We'd like to hear from you during this hour of Midday on Media with David Zurich. What do you make of Trump's popularity? How else do you explain it? Is there a political explanation for him? Or is he just a famous guy who's kind of a loudmouth, a showman?
Is that
the appeal, and is that going to wear off? Now, how about Ben Carson? Now, Ben Carson has been coming up in the polls.
He's actually challenging Trump in some cases.
So you can't attribute all of that to television, although he's been pretty high profile for the last couple of years. He's been on Fox TV a lot.
Yeah, Ben Carson is interesting in this regard. I think one of the things that has, and a matter of fact, I have to tell you, I saw this last night or the night before. I saw it on one of the late. Oh, I saw it last night on Seth Meyers' show. As a matter of fact, the late show on late night on NBC with Seth Meyers. He showed half a screen of Ben Carson. He was going to make a political joke, and you know he did the Saturday Night Live, and he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But half a screen with Ben Carson. Half a screen with Cuba Gooding Jr.
as Ben Carson
in the Showtime movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that referenced repeatedly. And I think that has a big role, the fact that television has anointed Ben Carson as a cultural hero by nature of a Showtime biopic, a biography movie about him,
right,
with a
gifted
big star.
Hands. Gifted
yes.
hands.
Gifted
right.
hands.
Yeah.
I think that, so again, television is defining it in a way. Mm-hmm. There is one quality about Carson that I didn't understand at first when he started running for president. And I thought about it because one of the interviewers last week or the week before asked him, said, you know, when you came out at first, you were saying a lot of things about homosexuality and a lot of stuff that was getting you in trouble and was kind of out there. You were talking about us becoming a socialist, Obamacare, and you know,
the worst thing since slavery,
right?
Said,
and Marx,
Obamacare.
And it's Marx, all of that stuff. Yeah. Those, you know, and I beat up on him as much as anybody else about that stuff, and thought it was really a bad place to take the conversation about the presidency that we're going to have that. And they said, so why'd you stop? Have you pulled back and now you stopped and you're surging in polls? What's going on? And Carson said, well, I understood that my message, what I was trying to say, was getting lost in statements like that. That I would say something like that and everything else I said was ignored. And I'm like, of course it was, because this is crazy. You're saying this crazy stuff. But he said, I understood that I had to ratchet it down and sort of, and it was almost like an athlete or a musician saying, I have to slow it down, slow the game down. But what I noticed
He's not changing his beliefs, though.
Right? Well, no, he didn't say that.
He's just pulling back on the rhetoric.
Yes, but the good thing, I think the, good thing in terms of being successful, Ben Carson, and I totally attribute this to having been a surgeon, plays within himself as in a way that no other candidate does. He's like a pitcher. The good major league ball players stay within themselves. They don't get rattled when they have a bad game, and when the headline the next day says they stink. Mm-hmm. They don't care. They go back out. They stay within themselves. Pitchers, too. Pitchers, somebody makes an error. They don't freak out.
That was clear in the first debate.
Yes.
He was waiting there patiently to be called on again. Right?
Exactly.
Remember, he made some comment about that.
And I think as a surgeon, you better play within yourself. Something goes wrong in the OR, you still concentrate. You don't lose your concentration no matter what because of life's on the line. No other candidate has that. Trump can get lit up. You can light Trump up in a minute. And I think it's helping him in an interesting way.
Well, we'll be watching that tonight. If you'd like to join us, the number 410-662-8780. We'll talk about a candidate who hasn't had a really good week in the media. That's Martin O'Malley, former Maryland governor. His appearance last night on the Seth Meyers show, the late night show on NBC. And also yesterday on the Diane Reams show.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
It didn't go so. You didn't hear that?
No.
So we're gonna have a little replay of that for you. That didn't go so well either. So a short break. We'll be right back. If you'd like to join us, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back. It's Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with David Zerwick, media critic of the Baltimore Sun, TV critic. David, let's take a couple of calls before we move on to late-night television, Martin O'Malley and Seth Meyers. Here's Mike in Pennsylvania first with a comment on Donald Trump. Hi, Mike.
I know that. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Good.
Thank you. Dan, you were asking the question, what's the appeal of Donald Trump? And I think Donald Trump is a throwback to a social hierarchy that favors straight white men, and he's calling women ugly and Mexicans rapists and blacks uppity and all these other kinds of things, and that's the language that prevailed and today is used behind closed doors by a lot of people that would support Donald Trump, but that's a language that was very commonplace back in the 1950s when there was a social hierarchy where straight white men sat at the throne of the apex of power and determined exactly where everyone else fit on the social hierarchy. And they've seen a lot of that privilege diminished over the years, a lot of egalitarianism that maybe they're not all that excited about, and they're rooting for Trump.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. And that counts for a lot of people, though. That means there's a lot of Americans who are hearing the Nightingale song here and saying, hey, it's okay, right? Maybe it sounds a little crazy, but that's actually how I feel. So you're saying you and I are in agreement on that, I guess. Yeah, Mike, anyway, I think.
Yeah. Oh, there
it
is.
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with you. That's the political analysis of Trump's popularity, at least part of it. We were talking about why he plays so well just based on his TV experience. Among all the candidates, he has had the most TV experience, wouldn't you say?
Oh, my God, far and away. Yeah, totally. So, and he's actually...
There may be some people in this country who don't pay any attention to politics but pay attention to television.
Yeah, and
right?
That's
it.
He's actually, you can see that he actually has learned something from his years on The Apprentice and on the stage about television. He was very good. I was prepared to really not like him. He was very good Friday night with Jimmy Fallon. And Jimmy Fallon was on The Tonight Show, was doing straight Saturday Night Live stuff, which, you would think Trump might be a step behind. No, he was right there. They did a skit where Fallon was dressed just like Trump and they were in the dressing room with all these pictures of Trump's dressing room, and it was Trump talking to Trump.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
And Jimmy Fallon says, you know what? That Jimmy Fallon's a lightweight. He's not fit to interview you. And he says, and Trump says, that's right, that's right. And nobody's fit. You know who's fit to interview you? Me.
Yeah.
And it was very funny.
Well,
but
funny.
then when he came out as the whole, but
that's
you know
kind
when
of funny actually.
It was.
Is he going to be president of the United States?
Yes, exactly. But
well,
you know
Ronald
when
Reagan was
when
they I was in the movies.
Well, you know that's what people say when you start getting, you know, serious about that. They say, calm down, Zoric. Ronald Reagan, what was he? He was practically, he wasn't even a reality TV star. He was 20, 40 Mule Team Europe.
I made movies with a monkey.
Well, in this case, but the little thing I was going to say is that when they sat down to do the skit after Fallon walked in, he said a line and there was a lot of laughter. And Trump was, you could see, was prepared to react right away. And he was good enough, he knew enough about TV to bite his tongue, let the laugh play out, and then deliver his line, and he got a second laugh. And I said, that guy understands TV. And then when he sat down at the chair, it was like he was two guys leaning across a desk talking.
Well, he's a guy that doesn't understand that, according to you, and actually it's pretty evident from this clip we're going to play. This is former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, Democratic candidate for President of the United States, on the late-night television show with Seth Meyers.
And I believe that a nation's character and a nation's credibility in the world is determined not just by how it acts in times of war, but in times of peace, and particularly in the face of humanitarian crises like these. So we were asked if we could take 65,000. You know what that's the equivalent to, Seth? That is the equivalent to making room for six more people in a baseball stadium that already holds 320,000 fans. We are a great nation. We are a generous nation. We are a compassionate people. And our enduring symbol is not barbed wire fences, not chain link fences. It is the Statue of Liberty. And don't think for a second that people in countries in the Middle East and in Muslim countries in particular aren't watching how we act in the face of this crisis.
Okay, what's wrong with that? That's O'Malley's answering a question about the Syrian refugee
crisis. That's exactly it. And I, in my post today on ZNTV reviewing it, that's exactly the same bite, so it's terrific that your producers also picked that. That's the language of an inaugural speech. Our enduring symbol is the Statue of Liberty.
It's a speech. It's
we
not
are
really
not
a right.
And also,
what are you saying? It's not a conversation. It's not late-night conversation.
It's not conversation unless you're having a conversation unless you're having a conversation with 25,000 people in Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's this high. And O'Malley's always done that. I mean, people who follow him politically here, you know this better than probably anyone who's followed him. He's always trying to be John F. Kennedy at his inauguration with the. Remember when he did the F. Scott Fitzgerald? Didn't he do the boats beat on the closing line?
I think he used that somewhere.
The Great Gatsby.
He ascends to this kind of he tries to ascend.
He tries to ascend. He aspires.
The soaring rhetoric that often falls flat.
Yes. And
including the speech he gave announcing that he was president of the United States from Federal Hill. One of the worst political speeches I've ever heard.
Well, and you've heard a few of them. That's exactly it. You know, honestly, and there is no medium. This is 1:15 in the morning. 8 minutes you got on a talk show, 1:15 a.m. on NBC. You know what? You couldn't get a more intimate meeting space, a more intimate space in the media. If anybody's watching you, they either just got off their work shift and they're trying to calm down and go to bed, or they're already in bed looking at you. They don't want a guy shouting about the American character and the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, maybe
they want
crack a joke here and there, maybe.
A conversation.
Yeah.
Like you and I are talking, although I'm shouting across Yankee Stadium because that's the way
so
I talk.
You thought mostly he fell flat on that show.
I thought it was.
Stayed up to watch this thing.
Yeah.
You're amazing. All right. Well, yesterday morning, did you happen to hear the Diane Rehm show yesterday?
I did not.
Okay. So, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley was scheduled for an in-studio interview down at WAMU with Diane Rehm. And he was late to the interview, so he decided he better call her on the phone. And Diane Rehm let the former Maryland governor know that she expected punctuality from her guests.
Governor O'Malley, I must say I'm somewhat surprised that you could not make it here in time as you had promised to.
Diane, you can't believe every promise every politician makes.
I guess that.
I really apologize. I am on military road right now, and we are following all of the applicable rules of the road, but we do not control the traffic accidents. I should have left even earlier.
Yeah,
my sincere
absolutely.
Apologies.
Well, I am disappointed because, as you well know, it's a national interview on NPR, and I do expect guests to live up to their promises.
She went a little bit far with that, I thought.
I thought she was
I think she was really
a little to me,
vexed. I think she was rather vexed.
As they say, as the British announcer.
Nigel from the BBC. Yes, Diane was obviously vexed. Anyway, later in the program, so he tried to crack a joke later in the program.
Oh,
this is trouble, right? Diane Rehm asked Martin O'Malley where he was getting the funds to compete in the presidential race. And O'Malley, well, here you go.
Finally, Governor O'Malley, where's your money going to come from to really compete head-to-head?
From listeners like you. Did that work?
I doubt it.
What is the matter with him?
Oh, my God, was that...
Can you believe he said that?
Oh, man.
She did not sound amused.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
what
boy.
He's still
running, I guess. He's thinking something's going to happen with Hillary's candidacy, but, like, the nation's going to turn to him? Our nation's going to turn our lonely eyes to you?
Oh. That is pretty bad. He had a bad day yesterday, didn't he? Yeah.
Triz is calling from Baltimore to make a comment about the debate tonight and about television and candidates. Hi, Triz.
Hi. My comment is a different perspective about the debates. As a former teacher and middle school teacher and debate coach, we, the coaches and I and the Baltimore Debate League, encourage students to use the technical, to learn the technical skills of debating, and we encourage students to watch professional debates. And I'm a little discouraged now because, as you stated earlier, it has become so contentious, and the candidates are resorting to name-calling, which, as teachers, we are trying to
minimize,
discourage our students from doing. And it just, I'm disappointed with the... I guess the caliber of debate that I expect from presidential candidates. And they don't, I guess, I don't see the example that we want our students to reach. That's my comment.
No, that's, thank you. That's a great comment, because that's really how the character of a society and a culture is formed. That's what we're teaching the next. It's not Lincoln Douglas. And you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's the next generation of smart, talented, verbally empowered, talented, good speaking students. This is what they're going to, in a way, aspire to, because why wouldn't you, in a way? And what is that? In the case of Trump, who they say wins these debates.
Calling people losers, yeah.
Dismissing people, yeah. Threatening Megyn Kelly, you know.
Yeah.
What are they to make of that? And, you know, really, it's, you know, teach your children.
See, I'm still at the point where I'm thinking people are just amused. This is a sideshow act, and people aren't really taking it seriously. It's September.
Yeah.
These primaries aren't until the caucus, you know, until the winter. I'm still sitting here thinking this is just entertainment.
You know,
could be completely wrong. He might end up being president of the United States, and then we'll all be scratching our heads. Not all of us, but obviously the people who voted for him won't be. But I'll be scratching my head about
that. You think of some other countries through the 20th century where people didn't take speakers seriously. I'm thinking of the 30s with some of those speakers. And all of a sudden, they're running the country, you know. And, you know, if and this I know to be true, if adolescents, young adults see those people on that stage, they instantly become role models in a way. Especially Trump is a great role model.
Calling people losers, calling people names and stuff like that, that kind of goes with social media and
the
internet too.
Yeah,
it actually goes with the bullying that we've been told that are supposed to be discouraged, right? The kids are very aware of and hyper aware of and is supposed to be discouraged in our society.
Trump is totally a product of that. And they say, oh, he's so good on social media. You know who is great on social media? President Obama's team was great on social media. We don't even know what they did yet. We're going to find out in about 5 years. People who write books and you'll go, you know, I totally am certain that they did the hashtags, you know, kill Big Bird and all that took Mitt Romney out in that second debate. That was his team that did it. That was not grassroots. That was AstroTurf. And it was brilliant. And every time I'm in a green room or something with one of the people who did social media, I go, hey, that night. And they're like, Zerwick, it's nice seeing you. I got to go now. I'm going to leave. We're not going to have this conversation. I know what they're telling me. But they say Trump's good. Trump is good. He doesn't have that kind of infrastructure, Dan. But he is good because he's as nasty and snarky as the general tenor of conversation in that media.
Let's take another call. While David Zerwick is joining us here from Midday on Media from Pikesville, this is Janet. Welcome. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Janet.
The reason that Donald Trump is so popular is that just about everybody has seen him on TV, but most people do not listen to your show or any NPR, and most people do not read editorials in newspapers, and most people don't know or care what the meaning of the word demagogue is, and most people don't understand the Constitution or how the government works.
So he's just playing to the lowest common denominator out there.
Yeah, people want simple solutions.
Yeah, they sure do. Yeah,
there can be no simple solutions because government is very complicated.
Mm-hmm. Janet, I really agree with you, and I really think that's a great sort of insight to bring to this. The one thing I would say in counter to that, not to counter it, but sort of to tack onto it or maybe put it in a little bit of context, is I think I agree with you about the simple solutions that he isn't even offering solutions, actually. He's offering, I can fix it because I'm Donald Trump. He isn't even giving us solutions. But I do think that it's resonated and that it's catching on so much because so many politicians and elected leaders who are smart and who do understand how complicated politics and American government is, have cheated us, have used their knowledge to game the system and to get rich themselves, and have shown a sublime kind of indifference to us in America. And so when Trump says, I care about you, you know, I mean, everybody opens their mouth. Oh, I'm going to take care of the middle class, hardworking middle class. I love the hardworking middle class. And then everything that happens takes more money from the middle class and they, you know, makes us poorer in a way. But I think we're, you know,
what's he going to do about that?
He you know what? He's offered nothing even close to concrete. But he says, in a way, I sound like you. I share your frustrations. The professional politicians don't share it. They're playing you, you know? So there's a little bit of reason for it. Yeah.
Let me just share a little bit of this before we go to this break. Ron Fournier in the National Journal has a piece out the last couple of days called Rise of the Crazy Butts. The Crazy Butts. He says, I spent most of the summer with crazy butts. From Detroit, where my family lives, to northern Michigan, where my family vacations, he writes, I heard Republicans, independents, and even Democrats begin sentences this way. Donald Trump is crazy, but. Crazy, but he's a winner, and I'm tired of America losing. These are all quotes that he reports in this essay. Crazy, but he can't be worse than what we got. Crazy, but he's punishing the establishment.
Yeah.
Crazy, but he's driving the media nuts.
Yep.
Crazy, but he says what I can't say.
Yep.
And crazy doesn't mean crazy in the clinical sense. Crazy as in crass, a landscaper from rural Michigan told me in mid-July. I'm not sure he has the temperament to be president, but I like how he's messing with your minds in Washington. crazy like a crash test dummy.
Yeah, you know, Ron, and Ron's a really good guy. I know him because I worked at the Free
Ron
Press.
Ron Fournier?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
And when we sit in the, we've been in the green room a lot the last couple months for some reason because he's on a lot, and we've talked. And he's a very smart guy, and he's a really perceptive guy. He's a very nice guy, too. He is not a hot dog columnist. You know, he's a veteran. He's been there. And he covered the Clintons. He started in Little Rock, I think. He's been through it. That's a really smart column.
Yeah.
That
is. Tells you a lot, actually. Yeah. We'll take a break here, and we'll come back and take some more calls for David Zurawiec. Also, we're going to talk to him a little bit about the mayor of Baltimore when we get back. 410-662-8780. Hey, welcome back. It's Midday on Media, our monthly visit with David Zurawiec. That's that Massachusetts thing. Did you hear that? Meteor?
Oh, yeah, I did.
You put an R where they don't belong, and you drop the R's where they should be, like, yeah, you know, knock the con.
Yeah, I'm Wisconsin working.
Wisconsin.
Class, so,
yeah, yeah, Wisconsin.
What do you want from me, you know?
Now, Brunswick is in Washington County, Maryland, and Martin's calling from there. Hi, Martin.
Hey, how's it going? I was wondering if perhaps Trump's appeal is more like the high school class clown. Everybody thinks he's funny, and he's kind of popular. But then if you actually have to do a project with him, you're like, oh, God, no, not that guy.
Or if you actually had to vote for him, right?
Exactly. So, right. You know, he may be polling high now, but when it comes down to it, perhaps his appeal will... The polish will be gone.
That's what I see. That's what I'm thinking. This is just summer replacement. Summer, what we used to call on television. What was it?
Summer reruns. Yeah,
or summer replacement. Sometimes,
yeah.
Right?
Summer replacement.
A completely
series.
Unusual
yeah.
Show.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It gets
cheap.
You through the summer until the new season began. That's old school television. Yeah. But that's sort of what I think is happening here. But
you know,
I don't know.
Not to me, Dan. And I'm sure not to you. I suspect. I shouldn't say I'm sure, but you know. I don't think at all. I mean, Trump to me is not a winner, but I think to a lot of people in this culture, though.
Oh, yeah.
I love that comment.
Successful guy.
Yeah, exactly. Martin, I love the comment. But a lot of people would say, well, you know what? He's got money. He's married to the homecoming queen. You know, maybe he's not such a class. Maybe class clown's not a bad thing. You know, he's got all these golf courses and stuff. To a lot of people who feel, you know... Dan, this is also true, and this is way too, you know, far off in maybe sociology for what we're doing here. But I also feel that a sense of community, in a way, has been shredded by media. It's made us not connected to each other the way we used to be. And so now all people want is, like, to make it on their own. They have some financial security. They can't trust the corporations anymore that they worked for. Just them and their families. So they see a guy like Trump and they say, it's a jackpot. He's, you know, he's rich. It's like athletes. You know, you go, oh, God, he signed a $40 million contract.
Good for him.
He's set for life. There's a winner, right. You know. So I think Trump fits that for some people, too. And Trump plays that when he says, I don't need money. I'm so rich, I can't believe how rich I am. Everybody else, these guys come to me and ask for money. I don't have to go to anybody. I don't have to be beholden to anybody. I think people look at that. And so I think there's some appeal to that, especially among baby boomers who worked hard all their life and feel squeezed now because the system really did. You know, I believe that.
Again, to the question, how is he going to help you with that?
Oh, he's not going to help you in the least. He's going to be worse than anybody else.
I don't think he cares
about that. Oh, God, no. He has no plan how to solve that. Of course not. Well, you know what he's going to say? He's going to blame some group. He's going to blame immigrants or something. You know, well, hey, you know what? An immigrant's not taking a job from a 67-year-old baby boomer, but the baby boomer's getting squeezed on medical and everything else, you know?
Here, take on this question by email. This is from Steve. This is a challenge to you. He says, on the one hand, you lament the influence and overlap of entertainment on political dialogue.
Right.
Okay. On the other hand, you complain about O'Malley not being entertaining enough on a talk show, and I'm not an O'Malley fan, but which do you want here?
No, not true. Not true. I do lament. And number two, if you're going to go on an entertainment show, Martin O'Malley.
Be a little bit entertaining.
Understand the language. You know, don't go into France and speak German. You know what I'm saying? You're in France, learn how to speak French. Don't go on a show and do it then. Go rent yourself a stadium and talk high-sounding rhetoric. Right. You know, that's what I'm saying. No, I don't think it's a contradiction. Good question.
But it's sort of like any good politician is adept at speaking to the audience in front of him, right?
Exactly.
Recognizing what it is. And
we've become so media saturated in this culture. You know, we talked about this too. You can't govern. You can't run a city like Baltimore unless you're skilled in the media. I think that's part of what we talked about with Stephanie Rollins.
Well, just your comment about her. You thought she never really got a handle on that.
I thought it astonished me that a mayor of a big city, East Coast city, could be so out of touch with media and so poor in her use of media. And I really believe it did her in with Freddie Gray, where media got ratcheted up by everybody coming to town.
One thing I'd say about it is, and I always sound like I'm defending her, and I just want to give a little perspective on it. I don't think she was practiced in being in the media's eye very much before she became mayor. You're saying after three or four years, you ought to be more practiced in it. You ought to get some help with that if you're not doing so well.
Well, two things. One, she hired spokesmen, and she hired a lot of people, sort of media advisors, who thought they were big-time players, and they weren't. And they tried to act like Washington people, and they tried to beat the hell out of the City Hall reporters, because you and I have talked to some
of
them.
I've caught some of that.
And I've sat down and talked to some of them and told them, stay tough. Don't let them back you down. They're hot dogs. They're wannabes. If they're who they thought they were, they would be in a White House. They're not. They're the mayor of Baltimore. So she did that. She created her own channel on TV. You know, when you say, okay, there's the global images of Baltimore from The Wire. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll spend $1.5 million or whatever it is to have a local cable access channel, and that'll compete with it. Well, it's not going to. You got to think of something else. Right. Oh, I know.
But you're talking mostly about the optics of Stephanie Rawlings Blake. On local TV, national TV.
It's a misunderstanding of media. It's not paying attention to media. It's not growing in your knowledge of media. And you can't govern without it. I'll tell you another thing.
I got to ask you this, though. What other mayor has been cast into a spotlight like this? Even nothing like this happened in O'Malley's time. Or Sheila Dixon was cast into the media because of her the criminal charges against her. But
yeah.
Anyway, but no, this is an extraordinary situation for any mayor to be thrown into.
Well, we had mayors in Los Angeles who certainly have dealt with this. We had mayors in Missouri who have dealt with this. We had mayors in New York who have dealt with much worse. You know, it's New York, I understand.
Okay.
We've had mayors who have dealt with it. Here's what I'm saying too, Dan, and this is a problem. And in a way, this I blame the media here. And I really talk about the electronic media because I know how hard the Sun has fought to open up that City Hall to get information out. They tried to close everything off, not share it with the public. I dealt with them on stuff, and it was awful. They thought they didn't have to share stuff. They didn't have to be transparent. Mm-hmm. And we fought them every day down on Calvert Street. So I'm going to blame this more on the electronic media. But Stephanie Rawlings Blake could say stuff and not get challenged on it. They wouldn't come back and challenge her. And I did a piece, it's on Zeon TV, about how the week before Freddie Gray, when there were peaceful protests, John Heilman, I think, one of the authors of Game Change from Bloomberg News, said to her, well, you haven't been, she was on Morning Joe, said, you haven't always been in favor of body cameras for police. And she jumped on him and said, that's not true. That's total misreading of my record, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I have always been, in fact, we're implementing a program right now. And he's, this week, you know?
And it wasn't true. No, it still hasn't happened.
But exactly.
Yeah.
So, and she could get away with that. And then she said, then the next night she's talking to Anderson Cooper on CNN. And Anderson Cooper says, well, why don't you have more facts about the arrest of Freddie Gray at this point? And this is still the week of peaceful protest. And she says, because the city cannot talk to those six police officers, you know? And it's a result of this, the act that, protects them.
Law Officers Bill of Rights.
Exactly. And she says, I have fought that and blah, blah, blah. Right away, she's defensive and she's saying I did all this stuff.
Hmm.
And it turns out that CNN goes to the video bank, others go to video bank, and they found out that she was at a press conference the day before with the deputy police chief where he said he talked to all six.
Right.
She used to get away with that. When you amped it up and you had 1 million cameras and you had everybody there and all the producers were checking stuff, it blew up on her. You know, and then you know how poor her performance was the week of the riots. It was, we wanted a leader and we just didn't see it. So you, instead, Elijah Cummings, Catherine Pugh, all these other people stepped in to fill that void.
David Zurich, we got a few minutes left in the show. Wow. Let's try to get some calls in. Spencer in Baltimore, comment back on our subject of Donald Trump. Go right ahead, Spencer.
Hey, I was calling because of a comment one of your callers made about his appeal being about his class clown type personality. And I actually have a perfect example of that. I was the class clown of my school. I was the guy that got up in front of assemblies and made ridiculous comments and made the whole school laugh. So I thought it was a perfect opportunity to run for the school president my senior year. But when it came down to it, that was a time to be serious, and I failed and did not win the presidency strictly because I made it all a joke.
Well, there's testimony. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. That
Thanks.
Is testimony.
Yeah,
thank
is testimony,
thank
Spencer.
You, Spencer. Interesting. Yeah. He learned his lesson. Linda in downtown Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Hello.
Hello. I'm calling because I wanted to know what your guest thinks of having yet another presidential debate televised only on cable and what that does to the people who are disenfranchised.
That's brilliant.
Whether
yes.
in our democracy.
Linda, that's a great, great, great point.
That's
more of television owning these instead of the people. This is the way it hurts democracy. If you don't have cable, you know, and we assume, you know, also the media class assumes everybody has cable. Everybody
yeah.
doesn't have cable.
Yeah.
And so you can't watch this. That's outrageous that you can't watch a debate, that it can't be put on a, you know, and I was going to say it should be on C-SPAN. C-SPAN's still cable, you know? I mean, think of that.
Hmm.
Linda, what a great point. What a great point.
How many people are left, though, off cable? I just want, I'm not disagreeing here. I'm just wondering what the number is. We don't have it.
I'll bet it's
yet.
Under 10%, but still, okay. That's, you know, even if it's 5%.
Quickly, yeah. D in Park Heights. D, please be brief. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, you know, I just want to say that, you know, Trump has been popular because he's filling the void. One, I mean, you know, the evangelicals in the South really, really hate Obama. So, you know, that kind of, you know, makes him look attractive to them. And then two, you know, the media gives him a break. The media don't ask him any hard questions. You know, they're constantly following him around, you know, with cameras. So, I mean, obviously, you know, his rating's going to go up.
Thanks. D, you're absolutely right. Z on TV, I've written so many columns. I got in a fight with Bill O'Malley on his show. Bill O'Reilly. That would be the former guy.
I just said Bill O'Donnell.
I said.
You know who Bill O'Donnell was? He used to be one of the voices of the Orioles years ago. Sorry.
I said Bill O'Malley.
Rest his soul.
Bill O'Reilly about it because you're absolutely right. They do give
him. What
about
Megyn Kelly?
They won't question it. She's the one, and he won't do her show. Her ratings are good enough to withstand it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else wants the ratings, so they're nice to them. They kiss up. I wrote a column. Can they kiss up any harder?
Yeah, I read that piece too.
Yeah. So thank you.
I read
you,
all
D.
your pieces, you know. I read the David Zurich.
I read yours first, Dan.
Yeah, sure you do.
I do.
Yeah, you go to the comics first. Everyone knows that. David Zurich writes the Z on TV blog at BaltimoreSun.com. He's the Baltimore Sun's TV critic and joins us here once a month for Midday on Media. Thanks for being here, David.
I loved it. This was so much fun.
Are we at the end of our time together? How much? 30? I have 30 seconds left? We have 30 seconds left.
I really loved it, Dan.
What are you working on today?
I'm doing a Sunday piece, actually, on a new show that's coming on Fox called Rosewood, and it's being paired with Empire, which was the hit of last season. And it's really about sort of multicultural television. It'll be in the Sunday paper. Oh, tonight. I'm doing a debate tonight, Dan. I'm going to be up.
You're going to be up all night?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We didn't talk about Stephen Colbert. You think he's doing okay?
I think he's doing well, and I think he's set off a booking war with these candidates, and he's brought politics to late night in a way that's going to make it very interesting during this election.
All right, David, that was a good 30 seconds. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
And thank you, everybody. I'm glad you got to tune in to Midday today. Please come back tomorrow. See you again soon.